Starwalker Studios presents GM Intrusions, the podcast devoted to Numenera and the strange. This episode is brought to you by the patrons of GM Intrusions. You too can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/GM Intrusions.
Welcome to episode 67 of GM Intrusions, your podcast devoted to Numenera, The Strange, and all Cypher System games. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. This week, I give my best sales pitch for the Cypher System, so if you're wondering whether to buy in, this episode's for you. I also cover a brand new strange adversary, the Catastrophe Cloud, in A&P. So grab your dice and get ready to spend some effort. It's time for a GM Intrusion. Hello, listener, and welcome. I wanted to let you know that our patron campaign is going to get a little strange. I and the players have decided that we're going to play the strange for the next few sessions. We've been playing Numenera, and I've been running a Numenera adventure for them, and the last two sessions of that are available on the Starwalker Studios YouTube channel. But we were talking in our session last week, and both of my players are really curious about trying the strange, and I have not yet run the strange, so I'm wanting to cut my teeth on it. So we're going to play the strange for a while and try it out, and I think that I am going to run the Dark Spiral, which will be pretty fun. It'll be interesting because I played the Dark Spiral for the playtest, and this will be the first time that I've ever run a published adventure that I've played before. So it will be interesting to see what that's like, kind of seeing the adventure from both sides of the table. So I'm really looking forward to that. So if you're interested in that, now is a great time to become a patron and get involved. So we did play another session of our Numenera campaign last week, our patron campaign. And that, as I said, is available on the Starwalker Studios YouTube channel. And I will have a link to that playlist in the show notes. Something kind of cool, I came up with my own monster to throw at the party during this adventure. And it was kind of my ninth world version of a classic vampire. And I called it the Nano Feeder because it basically feeds on nanites. It drinks blood like a regular vampire, but it's actually drinking the blood to get the nanites in the bloodstream of mystics and healers and nanos and other PCs that have esoteric-like abilities. And so I called it the Nano Feeder, although one of my players, Mr. Philip Coffey, dubbed it the Raisin Vampire, and it seems to be sticking. I don't know if that's good or not, because I was describing the thing, and it's a little withered looking, and I described it looking, as compared to a human, as a raisin looks compared to a grape, and so it was called the Raisin Vampire from then on. So I did a write-up of that creature on the GM Intrusions Google Plus page, and I will have that linked in the show notes if you want to check it out. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in Under the Lens today. But one of the just wonderful things about the Cypher System is how easy it is to come up with your own creations, whether that's a creature or an NPC or a cipher or an artifact or whatever. It's so easy to do. I wanted to announce that I've picked a date for the December patron hangout, and that will be on Sunday, December 7th at 2 p.m. Eastern time. So if you're an eligible patron, you should have received an invite to the Google event, And Google Plus should adjust for your local time zone in that event so you can see what time it is for you. And again, I'm putting out surveys for these every month, and I am picking the day and time that works for the most patrons. So I did just send out the survey for the January hangout. So if you're eligible for that, you should have received an email from Doodle. So please respond to that so that I can pick a time that works for you. And also, one last time, I'll remind you that the November hangout is available on Star Walker Studios YouTube channel. I'll have that linked in the show notes too. And from now on, those will always be available on our YouTube channel if you want to check them out so that all listeners can enjoy these and not just the patrons, because I appreciate all my listeners. All right, so I wanted to talk just a little bit about the Obsidian Monolith supplemental podcast, GM Intrusions, and the Obsidian Monolith actual play episodes, which is a supplement for the Obsidian Monolith, a supplement of a supplement. As you know, if you've been listening to the show for a while, I occasionally put out an Obsidian Monolith episode where I talk about a campaign I'm creating and I kind of take you with me through the process. So if you're a new GM or you're just wanting to learn maybe some new tools for your toolbox, it can be helpful to you. And I've also started releasing actual play episodes of my playtest of that campaign. And I think this would be really helpful to new GMs, and I've never heard of or seen anything quite like this where, you know, you get to see the theory behind what I'm doing and why I'm doing it and how I'm doing it, and then you get to see it put in practice and see what happens when the players get a hold of it. And wow, I wish I would have had something like this when I was a new GM. I think I could have learned a lot of lessons that I did learn eventually a lot quicker. As you may have noticed, I cranked out quite a few episodes of the actual play. And what I do are we play 3 to 4 hour sessions, and I break those up into usually 2 or 3 episodes, just depending on where a good stopping point is, just to make it a little bit easier for you to download so the files aren't so big, and a little bit easier to listen to, because very few people have time to sit and listen to a 3 or 4 hour podcast episode. And it's just easier to break them up into smaller pieces. So that's what I've been doing. And as you know, between the season 1 and season 2, I took a vacation. So I had a week off where I didn't have to work. And we did do some traveling, but some of that time I was home. And then I took another couple weeks where I wasn't producing GM Intrusions. And so I spent a lot of time during that period editing these. And so the actual play episodes I've released so far are all ones pretty much that I edited during my vacation. And so now that I'm back in the swing of things, it's been really hard finding time to work on those, and they take a lot of time. So just to give you an idea of how much time these take, and this is just the production and editing, this is not including the actual time that we're playing, but once I have the recording, for instance, yesterday on Sunday, I worked on it for about 8 hours, and I ended up with 30 minutes of finished content. So I'm cutting a lot of stuff out. I started out with almost a 4 hour session, and I've already cut out almost half an hour of it, just cutting out, you know, long pauses and off topic discussions and ums and ahs and things like that, just to make it more enjoyable for you to listen to. I've been having a hard time getting these done because they take so much time. And like I said, I spent pretty much my entire Sunday working on this, and I still don't even have enough for one episode, much rather getting the whole session done. So I've been wondering what am I going to do? Because I would like to get these out eventually. Kind of what I've been doing and what I want to do with this is I make an episode of the Obsidian Monolith where I talk about the theory of how I create the adventure and what my thought process is and all that. And then I put out the actual play episodes of that adventure so you get to see how it turned out. And then I do another Obsidian Monolith episode where I talk about how I create the next adventure. And then I put out the actual plays for those. So I just think that's a great way to do it. I think it makes the most sense and it will be the most useful for you, the listener. However, the ramification of that is that the Obsidian Monolith episodes have to kind of wait on the actual play episodes to be done so I can put them out together. And I had originally, when this was a milestone goal for the Patreon campaign, I had said that, you know, I hope to put out the Obsidian Monolith once a month. And if I'm going to keep it in sync with the actual play, I'm not sure if I'll be able to do that while I have to work a day job. So there are two ways that I could handle this, and I've put up a poll on the GM Intrusions Google Plus page so that you can vote which of these you'd like to see me do. So the first option is I still do my regular GM Intrusions episode like you're listening to right now every week. And then as I can, as I find the time, I edit the actual play. As I get those edited, then I put them out along with their companion Obsidian Monolith episode as bonus additional content in those weeks. So what this means is every week, no matter what, you get GM Intrusions, and then sometimes you'll get Obsidian Monolith and or actual play episodes. However, if I do it this way, it could very well mean that there may be weeks or even months where there are no Obsidian Monolith or actual play episodes because I just haven't been able to get them edited. And then so you may go a month without any, and then the next month you may get one or the other every week because, you know, I've edited a 4-hour session and I have the Obsidian Monolith episode to go with it, and then I can release them. So that's one option. The other option is that I could occasionally, maybe say once a month, for that week, instead of producing a regular GM Intrusions episode, I could instead work on the actual plays and put out an Obsidian Monolith episode instead of GM Intrusions, and then also put out actual plays. And if I did it that way, I could put out the Obsidian Monolith and the actual plays a little bit more quickly because I could basically 1 out of 4 weeks take the time I spend on GM Intrusions and spend it on that instead. So I'm fine with either. I want to do what will make the most people happy. So please follow the link in the show notes. Or if you're already a member of the GM Intrusions community, just go there and you'll find my post. And please vote on that and let me know which of those work for you. And I just realized I didn't put up an option for I don't care. So I guess if you don't care, just put in the comments that you don't care. All right, so I have a really exciting announcement to make today, and I'm not 100% sure if I'm supposed to make this announcement today, but no one told me not to, so I'm going to. I've been sitting on this for quite a while, and I'm really excited about it, and I think I might have hinted about this once or twice. I hate doing that, so now I finally get to tell you what I've been hinting about. So GM Intrusions is now featured on a new podcast platform called Joyride. And this is a really exciting thing. I'm recording this show on December 1st. The platform launched today. It's live right now. You can go check it out right now. And you can find GM Intrusions there at getjoyride.com/GM Intrusions. And basically what Joyride is it is a platform for podcasts, and it is a cross-platform platform. Okay, that doesn't sound very good. But basically, what you can do with this is you can find and manage and listen to all your favorite podcasts. You can listen to them everywhere, anywhere. You can listen to them on your desktop computer. You can listen to them on your Android phone. You can listen to them on your Apple phone. You can listen to them on whatever kind of tablet you might have. And you can also sync them across all your devices and the Joyride website. And the other thing that's cool about this that makes it different from some other podcast apps out there, other than the fact that it's cross-platform, is Joyride also includes within it a monetization for podcasts. So if you're a patron or if you're familiar with Patreon, this has something pretty much exactly like Patreon built into it. However, it is made for podcasters. Sometimes with Patreon, I feel like I'm trying to fit a square peg into a round hole because they seem much more geared towards YouTube videos. And I've made numerous requests of them throughout the year now, I think I've been with them, of ways that they could help us podcasters out. And they're not doing it. I always get these very diplomatic, you know, responses that say that my opinion's very important, but yet, I don't know. But this platform is made for podcasting specifically, and already it's been a lot more convenient for me to set up, so I have very high hopes for this. I've checked out their app on my phone, and it's pretty sweet. It's pretty smooth. The website's really nice, and just like with Patreon or even the Starwalker Studio site, you can just go listen to podcasts on the website if you don't use an app. And they are saying that they are going to have a library of over 100,000 podcasts. So this is really exciting. It's just launching today, and GM Intrusions is one of the lucky few. We're one of the featured podcasts at launch. Like I said, you can check this out on your computer, or if you have Android, you can get an app in the Google Store for your phone for Joyride. If you use an Apple phone right now, their mobile website is compatible with iOS. There is an iOS app coming out shortly after Christmas, so that is coming very soon. And it's also configured to work on 7 and 10 inch tablets. There is the Android Auto app, which is launching in early January, and the Apple CarPlay app that's also launching in early 2015, and Joyride will be available on both of those. And again, your Joyride account will sync all of your podcasts over all of your devices and the website, so you never miss an episode, and you don't have to deal with syncing things on multiple devices. So this is really exciting, and so go check us out there. We're at getjoyride.com/GMintrusions, and I was very careful to set this up exactly like my Patreon page. So if you want to become a supporter on Joyride, you will get the exact same things that the patrons get on Patreon. All the rewards and everything is exactly the same. So this kind of segues into the next thing I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk a little bit with you today about how I would really like to take some steps forward with Starwalker Studios. So I've been doing this podcasting for almost a year and a half now, and I really, really enjoy it. I always figured I'd enjoy it, but I enjoyed it a lot more than I even realized I would. I'm quite passionate about it, and it's something that I would really like to do more of. I wish I could spend more of my time doing this. And I'm also very, very proud of the what I consider high-quality podcasts that we produce here in the studio. And by we, I mean mainly me and my wife, Nikki, who is very much involved in the studio. A lot of times she's behind the scenes, but she is more front and center in some of our podcasts. For instance, Beer Taster, she hosts that with me. So I have a lot of plans and a lot of ideas for how to do more with the studio. I'd love to make more shows. I'd love to do more with the shows I already have. However, time is a limiting factor in all of this. There's only so much time in the day, in the week, and I have other obligations. And so there is only so much time that I can devote to the studio, that I can devote to GM Intrusions and the other podcasts I do. Now, I'm very lucky in that I am in a position where I could hypothetically, theoretically, in the future, scale back on my day job a bit as I scale up Starwalker Studios in order to have more time for producing podcasts. Which I would really like to do. But for that to actually work in practice, the podcast would have to start supporting themselves more than they do. And my dream is to one day be able to do this full time and still be able to do my part to help provide for my family. So if you enjoy our podcast and you'd like to see what we can do with even more time to devote to them, then please help us out. And right now, there are 5 great ways that you can help out Starwalker Studios. First of all, you could become a patron or a supporter of the show. And again, you can do that either at patreon.com/GMintrusions or at getjoyride.com/GMintrusions. Another way that you can help us out is you could give us a donation. We now, thanks to Nikki, have a donate button on the website at starwalkerstudios.com/GMintrusions. Our site uses Stripe for this, which is a company that takes internet security very seriously. And I have a link in the show notes where you can learn more about them and what they do to keep your information secure. The third way that you can help out the studio is you can test run Audible books with a free trial, courtesy of GM Intrusions, and I will have a link to that in the show notes as well. The fourth way that you could help, if you like, is if you do any shopping on Amazon, you could use our referral link. And I used to talk about this in the early days of the show. I don't mention it as much anymore, but I will have that in the show notes as well. And all that does is you just click on this link. It takes you to Amazon and it just lets them know that you were referred to them by Starwalker Studios. And then you just do whatever you would normally do on Amazon. It doesn't cost you any more than it would normally, but it helps us out. And finally, the fifth way right now that you can help out the studio, and this is not to be underestimated, is you can tell your friends about our shows. So right now we have, of course, GM Intrusions, which is in your ear hole right now. But we also have Age of Gaming, which is a podcast about current and future video games, focusing mainly on games available on PC and PS4. And Nikki joins me sometimes on the show, and I'm planning to have other guests on that show as well. That's a weekly show. And also Beer Tasters, which is another weekly show. And that one, Nikki's with me on every episode, and we talk about craft and imported beer. And every episode, we each try a beer and we tell you about it. And this show is both for people who are already lovers of beer and into the hobby and want to learn about new beers and just hear people talk about beer. But it's also for people who are curious about it and maybe want to get in the hobby. And we try really hard to explain things as we go. So if you don't know anything about beer, it's a great place to start. All three of these podcasts, by the way, are available on Joyride, which is awesome. So again, I really hope that you'll help us out. We have five different ways there with varying levels of commitment on your part. But you know, if you're not in a place where you can make a donation, totally understand that, but help get the word out, because that does a lot as well, especially with our two new podcasts. It's always hard in the beginning, making a splash in the podcast scene and leading new listeners to the show. So thank you very much for your support. We really appreciate it.
Under the Lens, the Cipher System.
All right, so this will be kind of a different Under the Lens today. I've been a lot in this segment. I really unpack the Cipher System and really dig into nitty-gritty things. So this week is a little bit different. I'm going to kind of take a step back and do more of a broad strokes kind of discussion. And the reason for this is I very often see online when new potential players come into our communities, they want someone to quote-unquote sell them on the Cipher System, which is to say, tell me why you like this system. Tell me why it's worth my time and effort to learn and to invest in and to figure out and to try out. And so that's what I'm going to do. I did my love letter to the listeners in the season finale of GM Intrusions for season one, and I've wanted to do a love letter for the Cipher System, and so this is it. I promise I won't get like real sappy. I'm not going to cry or anything, but I thought I would talk about why I like the system, why this is my favorite system, and why I think if you're considering it and you haven't tried it, why I think you should give it a try. So first of all, and this is the biggest thing, and really everything else I say is just kind of iterations of these four things. The Cipher System is easy to learn, it's easy to teach, it's easy to run, and it's easy to play. And in a nutshell, you know, my 5-second elevator hard sell of the game, that's it. It's easy to run, teach, play, and learn. And that's really important, you know, especially for me. In the past, I've had a lot of players who were new to role-playing games, had never played a role-playing game before. So not only do I need to teach them how to play a role-playing game, but then I have to teach them the specific game that we're playing. And pretty much every other game that I've ever run, had quite a steep learning curve, and I would often see new players get frustrated because it's just so much to wrap your head around at once. The cipher system is not like this. It's very easy to understand. It's very easy to teach, and it's very easy to learn by doing, which that has always been my preferred way to teach an RPG, is to not sit there and explain all the rules ahead of time, but just start playing the game and just explain things as they come up. Now, the problem with a lot of RPGs I've played, for instance, you know, White Wolf games that I played in the past, or various iterations of D&D, or Pathfinder, or Star Wars, is that in order for them to make their character, you know, you have to explain a lot just so that they can make a character and understand what they're doing with making a character. So it kind of forces you to do all this front-loaded crap before they can even get into the game, playing the game and enjoying the game. And that's one thing I really like about the cipher system, is you don't need to know really the system hardly at all to make a character. In fact, as a GM, you can even make their character as you go. And you can start out with just give them a list of foci and just say, hey, here's the foci that are available. Pick a few that you think sound interesting, and then I'll tell you the kinds of things you can do with each of those foci. I'll basically tell you the abilities that you get. And pick a focus, and then we're going to go. You don't need a descriptor to start playing. You don't need a type to start playing. If you've got your focus, you already know enough about your character to start playing the game and start getting a feel for your character, and then we can fill in the blanks as needed as we go. And I'm a big fan of this method. You know, this is something that's done in Fate, and if you listen to the show, you know I'm not a huge fan of Fate, but one thing that I really do like about Fate is how in the character creation process, you are encouraged to not have to pick everything right away. You don't have to choose all your aspects right away. You can leave some of them blank. And as you play the game and you get a feel for the game, and as you get a feel for your character, then you can fill in those aspects, or you can change them. And another game that's great about this is the Star Wars Edge of the Empire game, where GMs are encouraged for the first few sessions to let players make changes to their characters, like changing skills around or whatever they want to do. And this is really great, and something that I didn't used to do way back when, and I really wish I would have allowed this earlier in my GMing history, because I think we've probably all been there where we're playing a new game, and this even works with video games like online MMOs and stuff like that. You're playing a game and you make a character you think you're going to like, but you don't really understand the game. You don't really know what's possible. You don't really understand how all the pieces fit together. And then you play for a while and you're like, this is really great, but if I would have known what I know now, I would have made a different character. And sometimes you end up making a different character, especially if it's a video game, you just have to make a new character and start over. But sometimes in a role-playing game, the GM will start a new story or whatever, and you make a new character. But, you know, lately I've been like, hey, if in the first few sessions you decide you want to change your descriptor, or you want to change the skills you're trained in, or whatever, go for it. To me, as a GM, I'm less concerned about being the boss or being the referee, or, you know, making sure that everything's by the book. I'm much more concerned with my players having a good time, and most importantly, my players really connecting with and loving their character. And if I have to break a few rules for a player to be able to play the character that they want to play, then I'm usually fine with doing that. And the easiest way is to let them make changes. You know, for instance, in Numenera or The Strange, you don't get a lot of skills. In fact, depending on what kind of character you play, you might not get any skills. And so those few skills that you do have, especially ones that you get to choose, are really important. And for a new player, they don't necessarily know what skills are going to be useful or what skills their character is going to want to have access to. So I think it's perfectly reasonable two or three sessions in for a player to be like, hey, you know, I took this geology skill and I never use it, but I use perception all the time. Can I switch them, you know? So anyway, sorry, that was kind of a tangent, but I really like the cipher system because it's very easy to make a character, and you do not need to explain all the ins and the outs for someone to make a character and make smart choices. And again, you know, you kind of want to understand a little bit to know what pools you want to put points in. And if you have an edge, you get to choose, like if you're a jack, where you want to put your edge in. But again, if as GM, if you're willing to either let them not make that decision right away and just leave those extra points kind of out in limbo until they want to spend them later, or let them change their mind later, then it doesn't even matter. And you don't even have to explain effort and edge and all that crap when they're making their character. You can save that for when it comes up in play, and it will make a lot more sense to them because they'll have an example right in front of them in the moment of how this actually works. It'll make a lot more sense. Another thing I love about this game is, or this system, I should say, it's a lot of games, or soon will be, is it's very easy to create NPCs. And a perfect example of this is my nano feeder that I created that I talked about a little earlier. It took me maybe 5 minutes tops. I don't think it even took 5 minutes to create that. Well, actually, it was an NPC, but it was actually more a creature because it wasn't really something you could interact with, but it was a full creature and it had mechanics. It wasn't just a level 4 creature. Like, I came up with some mechanics for it in like 5 minutes. And most of that time was actually spent coming up with the flavor and the storytelling elements of this creature, as opposed to the mechanical elements. It was all about, what does it look like? How does it move? How does it fight? What are its motives? How did it come to be? You know, what can kill it? You know, things like that, as opposed to, you know, mechanical things like, oh, what's the DC of this saving throw? And what's the DC of that saving throw? And what skills does it have? Like, I spent very little time on that. And that was just really easy. I think I made it like level 5. I was like, it's level 6 when it attacks. It's level 6 for perception, because it's really dangerous and it has really sharp senses. It's level 6 for stealth because it's really sneaky. And that was a bit about it. I figured out how much damage it does, how much armor it has. I mean, it was just like bam, 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 bam. And you can do this on the fly in your game. And when you're doing that, you can just be like, it's level 4. And there's everything you know. It's level 4, so it does 4 damage. It has 12 health. Any rolls involving it are difficulty 4. And that's all you really need to know. I just found in the Dark Spiral, because I've been preparing for the Dark Spiral, some cool little nuggets for any Cypher System GM. So if you have the Dark Spiral, definitely check this out. Or if you have the PDF, where it talks about how to scale up encounters, and it gives some advice about adding levels to creatures. And some of this we saw in the 9th World Bestiary, but one suggestion that I saw that I hadn't seen before was adding certain amounts of armor, or adding more actions depending on how many levels you're adding to it. And that was really cool, because that's something I've wondered about. I'm like, well, if I'm adding a bunch of power to this thing, it should have more actions, right? Because, you know, a level 9 creature that can only do one thing around isn't really that scary, you know, when facing a party of 6 players. Now, if it can do 4 things around, now we're talking, right? So this is all really easy to do with the Cypher system, and one of the reasons I love the system. And again, if you're coming up with something on the fly, it's very easy to say, okay, it's level 4, and then as you're going through the encounter, think, oh, well, you know what, actually, because of what this thing is, I think it would be really good at climbing, and for some reason its climbing ability comes up, and so you say, well, I think it'll be level 5 for climbing. Or a classic example is this thing is really big, so I think it would be a little bit easier to hit than it normally would, just because it's so big. So it's only a level 3 for its defense rolls as far as to hit it. Another thing I really love about the Cypher system is it's really easy to make decisions as GM, to make rulings, even if you don't know what a particular rule is. You don't feel like you, or at least I don't feel like I have to always look stuff up, because the system is so... I really hate to use the word simple, because it's not simple, but it's so easy to grasp. Like the principles of the system are simple, you know, and then there's complexity in the iterations of those principles. But it's so easy to kind of wrap your head around how the system works, that when you encounter a situation and you're not sure how to handle it, you can just kind of feel your way through it and say, well, I think it would look like work like this. And chances are really good if there is an actual rule, when you go look it up, it will be exactly what you came up with or really close. If you really, you know, understand the system, and I don't think it's that hard to understand. I really like that. You know, a game like, for instance, Pathfinder is not like that. I mean, yeah, you can do the rule of just add plus two to something. But if you actually want to know, like, what is the system for figuring out how far someone can jump, or what is the system for figuring out in a chase who catches who, you know, there's going to be a rather involved system for that that you're not likely to just come up with on your own on the fly, unless you are like just super steeped in that game. But with the Cypher system, it's a lot easier to do that. I also feel like the Cypher system is right in the Goldilocks zone of crunch, which is to say there's enough, but not too much and not too little. So for instance, you know, one of my issues with the Fate game is I don't think there's in some ways there's too much crunch, in some ways there's not enough. And basically it's because I feel like too much of that game is based on the aspect mechanic. And, you know, it seems like, oh, well, there's really only one mechanic to this game, so it will be really simple and easy to learn. But the problem is when you try to fit that mechanic in all these different things, it actually gets more complicated than if you had a few different mechanics for specific things that were all simple and easy to learn, as opposed to trying to, you know, shoehorn this mechanic into like everything from a weapon to environmental things, to your character, to NPCs, to creatures, to just on it, like everything. It just gets really complicated and it's a lot of paperwork and crap to juggle. So that's an example of the crunch level not being right, at least for me personally. Other examples are games like Pathfinder or like D&D 3rd edition. I haven't played 4th or 5th, so I can't really speak to those. Or even like the old White Wolf games, which were a lot less crunchy than Pathfinder or D&D, but still to the point where it would bog down play, and to the point where you weren't always comfortable just coming up with things on the fly. Although I was much more comfortable with World of Darkness than I was with like Pathfinder or D&D, because like the Cypher system, the World of Darkness kind of had a few basic principles to it that you could apply across the board if you weren't sure how to do something. But yes, I feel like the Cypher system is in that sweet spot where, you know, if you don't have enough crunch, it's not really a game anymore, right? I mean, it's like a role-playing experience, or I don't know what you'd call it, freestyle acting or something. It's not a game. Without rules, without crunch, there is no game. But with too much crunch, it becomes too much of a game and not enough of a role-playing experience, and you feel like you're playing like a miniature strategy war game as opposed to a role-playing game. So, you know, and everybody's sweet spot's going to be a little different. So there may be people that say, oh, the Cypher system doesn't have enough crunch or it has too much. But for me, it's in that perfect spot. And I can point to any other game I've ever played or run and said, it has a little bit too much or a little bit not enough. Or like Fate, in these ways it has too much, in these ways it has not enough. It just doesn't work for me. But this system, it's like just in that sweet spot. And it's nice because you can, as GM, you can keep things really simple and straightforward, or you can, you know, get more into it if you want and use things like cooperative actions and use things like assets more and trading damage for effect. And a lot of those things in the optional rules are ways that you can add more crunch to the game if you want to, but you can run the game without any of that stuff and it works great and it's very fast and loose. And kind of an extension of this is combat is very fast, but there are still tactics and strategies involved. Again, we're kind of in that sweet spot where, you know, I've played games that have very fast combat, but they're so, you know, rules light or crunch light that there's no real, you know, strategy or tactics to it at all. It's just like down to a roll of a dice, or you just really can't fail unless you are not trying. And then I've had played other games where it's the opposite and there's so much involved that, you know, one round with more powerful characters takes half an hour, and, you know, your 4-hour gaming session is one combat and maybe you don't even finish it. I had, and not even uber high, but like in the teens, like, say, 15th level characters in D&D 3.5, and we would have a six-hour gaming session that was, like, one combat. And it just took forever, and, you know, so that there's extremes, right? And I feel like the Cypher system is right there in that sweet spot in the middle. And again, you can, as GM, control that even to a degree by how many of the optional rules you use. Trading damage for effect. I mean, there's a lot there that you can do that's like things that you can do in Pathfinder and stuff where they have all these rules for it. But with this, it's a lot easier to actually memorize that and know how to do it as a GM during the game and not have to look it up. And easy for your players to understand. And the same thing with cooperative actions. Or again, you can run without any of that stuff and keep it even faster and looser. It also helps, of course, that the GM is not rolling dice. Rolling dice takes time, especially in games with dice pools, which don't get me started on dice pools, but those take even longer. And so you think about, like, say, a combat in D&D where for every time that the players are rolling dice, the DM is rolling dice. And sometimes the DM is rolling dice more than the players because he's running a whole bunch of creatures. Sometimes he rolls less because he's just running one big, huge creature. But he's still rolling dice, and that is adding time to each turn. And it's time when the players are not doing anything. They're sitting there watching the DM roll dice and do math, and that can't be fun for them. So that's another thing I love about the Cypher system is the GM does not roll, and the players are always being active. The players are always rolling dice. They're always busy doing the things that they want to do in a game, and the GM is free to do the things that he wants to do in the game, which is to tell really cool stories. It also works really well with different genres and settings. And already we've seen this with Numenera and The Strange. So you take Numenera, which is science fantasy, for lack of a better term. And then you have The Strange, which is fantasy science. I don't know what you'd call The Strange. Modern fantasy, urban fantasy is basically what I would call it. However, you know, on Earth, it's urban fantasy, but then in Arden, it's straight up high fantasy, right? And then in Rook, it's maybe science fiction or space opera, that kind of blend of science fiction and fantasy. And then depending, you know, what recursions you use, or if you come up with recursions yourself, it could be horror, it could be full on science fiction, whatever you want, right? And the Cypher system works really well. And that's one thing I was really curious about when I started playtesting The Strange is, how's this going to work in modern Earth with handguns and smartphones and things like that? And it works fine. It works really well. And I think, you know, it's hard to find a lot of systems out there that you can play a mundane game versus a science fiction game versus a fantasy game versus a horror game and use the same system for all of those. And it works and it feels right with all of them. And again, I think that that's a lot because of the inherent simplicity of the Cypher system, but also the complex ways that you can iterate on it. So, you know, those simple parts that make it up are the same no matter what genre or what game you're playing. But the way that you use them, there's a lot of different things you can do to create the right feel that you want for your game and your setting. It's also very easy, if you want, to come up with your own systems and house rules because, again, the system's pretty easy to grok. Now, I'm really curious to see the Cypher system rulebook, to flip through it, because to me, and don't take this the wrong way, but to me, it doesn't really seem like we need one. You know, if you have Numenera, or you have The Strange, or you have both, you really, if you think about it, you have everything there you need to take the Cypher system and do whatever you want with it. You have the Cypher system. You have the system as applied to that particular setting or that particular game. And it would not be at all hard to say, I'm going to take the system and make a hard sci-fi game out of it. And that's what Jim Walls is doing right now. I saw a picture of him recently. He still has his hair. He didn't rip all his hair out trying to do it. And it seems to be working really well for him. Or you could do a horror. You could do, hey, I want to do Call of Cthulhu with the Cypher system. Or I want to do Star Wars. Or I want to do Mass Effect. Or I want to do Lord of the Rings. Or whatever you want to do. I don't really think we need a book to tell us how to do that. We already have two books that tell us how to do that. Now, I don't really think that Monte Cook Games is going to put out something completely superfluous. So what I'm anticipating and hoping this book will be is just filled with lots of toolkits for you to use and lots of examples of types and descriptors and foci and abilities and examples of different variations of the rules, different ways to do different things. Hopefully it's going to be a very, very much a teach a man to fish kind of book, if you know what I mean. You know, the saying, if you give a man a fish, he eats for a day. If you teach a man to fish, he eats for a lifetime, you know. So hopefully this will be a teach a man to fish kind of book. And it'll be like, here's how you do it. And then you take that and you take those tools and you do whatever you want with. If it's just a bunch of examples and here's a million new foci and here's a million new descriptors and here's a million new type abilities, that's not so useful. I think any one of us that's a GM could do that on our own. Again, the system's not that hard to wrap your brain around. It's not that hard to iterate on. So anyway, I'm on a tangent again. Again, the GM doesn't roll. I can't overstate the importance and the beauty of the GM not rolling. And I've been really spoiled by it. When I first heard about this game, before it was even out, I was a little skeptical about the GM not rolling because I wondered if me as GM would have as much fun because I like rolling dice. But since I've been running the games, I could give a shit about rolling dice as a GM. I've since learned that that's not what is fun for me as GM. In fact, it's a pain in the ass anytime I have to do it. And I went and tried to run Star Wars Edge of the Empire, and I tried to run Fate since I've started playing Cypher System, and I hated having to roll dice. And the first thing I started doing was trying to figure out a way to run Star Wars in a way in which the GM would not roll dice. And I've yet to figure out a good way to do that. So if you have any ideas, let me know. GMintrusions@gmail.com. Yeah, because I'm spoiled now. And now that I've played this way, it just seems stupid to me for a GM to waste their time rolling dice for a lot of reasons. For one, that time could be better spent planning for your next encounter, deciding how an NPC or a creature is going to react to what the PCs are doing, or thinking of a GM intrusion or something like that. Doing something creative, you know, that's really what the GM is there to do. Thinking about ways that you're going to pull in the character's backstory or how you're going to make this thing happen that you need to happen. Things like that. Also, you know, all that time you're spent rolling dice is time that should be focused on the players, and they should be rolling dice, or they should be telling you what their characters are doing. You know, this game is about them. It's not about you. You know, if you want to roll dice, go play Yahtzee or go play an RPG, right? So yeah, it just seems stupid now to roll dice as GM, and I just can't imagine why so many games have done it that way for so long, other than just, you know, well, that's what people do, right? I also think that the Cypher system handles all situations very well, not just combat, which not all RPG systems can say. Although both Numenera and The Strange are very heavily focused on combat, despite what some may claim, and I'm going to talk more about this next week, you could easily make your own game that is much more focused on other non-combat things like social situations, overcoming intellectual problems, things like that. It'd be very easy to do. Anything that is a combat ability or skill or whatever in either of the games, you could come up with something similar to that, analogous to it, that is not combat, that does a similar thing in a social situation or an intellectual situation or whatever. So in a nutshell, what I love about the Cypher system is it's very easy to make it the game that you want to run, and the system works. There is no need for house rules or to fix anything. And for those of us that have been around the block for quite a few times, like myself, who've played other less well-developed systems, I'm looking at you, second edition Dungeons and Dragons. You know, we have these habits of having to fix systems, and right away when you're first reading the book, you're like, all right, let's find problems, potential problems, and start thinking about how I'm going to house rule this so it'll work. And it's a hard habit to break. I'm happy to say that after almost a year and a half now, I think, of running and playing Cypher System games, I've well break that habit. I no longer look at a game looking for ways to fix it or problems or house rules I need to make. If I'm reading a game and I see problems, I just don't run it. Why bother?
Antagonists and protagonists.
All right. So for today's antagonists and protagonists, I'm very excited to talk about a new, brand spanking new creature from the Strange Bestiary. I have my PDF copy of it. So the Strange Bestiary is now available. It is $14.99 for the PDF on the Monte Cook Game Store and $39.99 for the print version on the Monte Cook Game Store. It is unfortunately not yet available on Amazon. I don't know what's up with that. For some reason, Monte Cook Games don't like to put things on Amazon right away. So much for that. If you go buy it at your game store, it's going to be $39.99. So there you go. And I would definitely, if you can, buy it at your game store so that you can have it right now. I don't know. I haven't gotten anything from Monte Cook Games recently since I got my Strange Core book, I think was the last thing. No, Sir Arthur's Guide was the last thing I got from them. But in the past, they have had some serious issues with shipping, which is one of the reasons I prefer Amazon, because I get stuff in 2 days and it's a lot cheaper. I don't know if they're still having issues or not. I haven't heard anything lately, which makes me hopeful that they've gotten it figured out. But nothing is more frustrating than to see people tweeting and on Google Plus about their new shiny book that you ordered like 3 weeks ago and you still don't have it. So if you can get it at your local GameStop, I would definitely recommend it. Of course, they're not going to discount it at all, probably. But what are you going to do? So anyway, so everybody has access to this now, so I don't feel bad taking critters from it. Now, I personally only have the PDF, and I do not have a tablet. So when I look at a PDF, I have to stand at my computer and look at it. So I'm sorry, listener, but I'm not going to sit here and read 161-page PDF. On my computer, I just do not enjoy reading PDFs. Maybe if I had a really nice tablet, I would, and I could sit on my couch and read them. I don't know. Maybe then I'd feel differently about them. However, I just have the PDF of this, so I will occasionally grab some creatures out of here. If there's something you see in this book that you really like and you want me to talk about, please let me know. You can email me at gmintrusions@gmail.com, or you can find me on Google+. Just look for Lex Starwalker. Or tweet me at Lex Starwalker and say, hey, please talk about this creature from the Strange Bestiary, and I'll do so. For today, I just kind of flipped through it and found a cool picture. This looks like a cool creature that I'm going to talk about. And it is called the Catastrophe Cloud. And the image of this, which is actually quite a bit different from the description, but the image, it looks like a giant mechanical mosquito. And I hate mosquitoes. I'm not big on, you know, driving things to extinction. And I'm not sure what the effect on the ecosystem would be. But if we could drive mosquitoes to extinction, I'm kind of for it. As long as it wouldn't lead to catastrophic consequences. I mean, what's the worst that could happen, right? Less diseases in the world? So anyway, the Catastrophe Cloud is a murmuration of thousands of tiny machines sharing one mind. And before you ask, yes, murmuration is a word. I'd never heard of it either. I looked it up. So if you look up murmuration, the definition is an act or instance of murmuring, which doesn't make any sense, or a flock of starlings. So if you Google it, you see some images, and the starlings make these really cool, they're like in a swarm. I think it's too big to call a flock. But they're in a swarm and they make these constantly changing, these cool shapes. I mean, they're not like geometric shapes or anything, but they make these cool shapes as their swarm changes and shifts and everything. And so that's what a murmuration is. And that's what these guys do. This is on page 27 of the Strange Bestiary, which if you're using the PDF is actually page 28. A catastrophe cloud is a murmuration of thousands of tiny machines sharing one mind, one purpose. The catastrophe cloud takes a variety of shapes and patterns as it approaches a potential target. So that's the murmuration. Becoming an entrancing, almost hypnotic display that belies the danger it poses. Each cloud consists of a million individual machines called catastrophes, each one about an inch or 3 centimeters long and having negligible weight. A catastrophe resembles a black wasp with 6 limbs and translucent black wings. So this is an instance where we have a bit of a disconnect between the description and the image. And this happens every once in a while for various reasons. However, pick the one you like. Do you like the image where it looks like a giant mosquito, or do you like it looking like a giant wasp? You pick. I tend to go with the image because then I can use the image, right? The back 4 legs provide locomotion while the front 2 end in small articulated hands. So that's a little bit different than a mosquito. And I'm looking, I don't see the hands on the image, but we don't see the bottom of the legs in the image. Even a single catastrophe is dangerous. Programmed to self-replicate, a catastrophe harvests materials from its surroundings and rapidly constructs a partner. Once it finishes, the 2 immediately start work on building another. One catastrophe can become a cloud in a matter of days. After the catastrophe cloud forms, it continues to grow, devouring everything in its path. Entire recursions have been stripped of resources to feed these ravenous swarms. A catastrophe cloud typically fills an area within a radius of 20 feet or 6 meters. So the environment of these things is mad science or standard physics. So this is something that I think would fit right at home in Numenera. If you're using this in The Strange, it will work on a mad science or standard physics recursion or on Earth. And let's see, we will skip the stats. You can check that out on your own. Single catastrophes sometimes go off program, and instead of constructing additional catastrophes, they build weird structures or artifacts. If normal catastrophe clouds find these cancers among their kind, they descend upon the defective catastrophe and whatever the loner was attempting to fashion. As far as combat, a catastrophe cloud is a mass of countless tiny machines. The cloud can flow around obstacles and squeeze through cracks and other openings that are large enough to permit a single catastrophe. The cloud can flow over and around other creatures. A character can move through the cloud, albeit at half the normal rate of movement. For characters inside the cloud, the difficulty of all tasks related to perception is increased. In addition, whenever a character takes her turn inside the cloud, she must make a might defense roll as the cloud begins to devour her. On a success, she takes a little bit of damage. On a failure, she takes more damage. A catastrophe cloud ignores any attack that targets a single creature, but it takes double the damage from attacks that affect an area. So that's exactly like D&D 3.5 and Pathfinder. Interesting. A catastrophe cloud cannot enter liquids and can be dispersed, treat as stunned and unable to act if subjected to a strong wind. Once dispersed, it takes an hour for the cloud to reform. However, remember, just one of these guys is dangerous. So just because it's no longer a cloud doesn't mean that everything's fine and dandy. Interaction, a catastrophe cloud has no means of communicating with other creatures, which is unfortunate. Someone pointed this out to me the other week. I can't remember who now. About how many creatures there are in Numenera, and I think in The Strange as well, that you cannot communicate or reason with. Again, which is something I'll get into next week when I talk about how Numenera and The Strange are much more combat focused than they're marketed to be. Use, a PC moving through an apposite gate brings along a stowaway, a single catastrophe. In a matter of days, this passenger becomes a cloud, and if not stopped, could become a significant threat. So again, there's a way to base a whole adventure on these cool little critters that I quite like. I like mechanical things. I'm a big fan of them in Numenera and The Strange. And something awesome about this, now I've just started looking through The Strange Bestiary, but I hope this is the beginning of a new trend, is we're given not one, but 2 GM intrusions for the catastrophe or the catastrophe cloud. My God, that's going to kill me. Let's see. And I'm not going to give you both of them because I want you to go look this up. So I will give you the first one. The catastrophe cloud destroys 1 cipher carried by a character it damaged. So there you go. There's an idea for an intrusion. And again, you know, if you're ever needing inspiration for intrusions, you can flip through either of the bestiaries or the creature sections of either of the core books and just look at the intrusions given for creatures for inspiration for whatever you're doing. So there is a catastrophe cloud. I've already mentioned that this would work very well in Numenera, and again in The Strange, works in a mad science or standard physics recursion. So this is obviously an antagonist. So how could we use this as a protagonist? Well, right away, I think that a paradox or a nano might be very interested in these things and might want to study them and learn how they work. I mean, they're pretty cool if you think about it, that just one of these guys can build another one, and then together within a few days, they can create a whole cloud. If this technology could be harnessed and if they could be reprogrammed to do what you want them to do, they could be incredibly useful. All right, well, that is about it for episode 67. Just going to do our wrap up and our intrusion. If you would like to email me, you can do so at gmintrusions@gmail.com. You can find me on Google Plus under Lex Starwalker. Please, please join the Google Plus community for GM Intrusions. We have a lot of fun there. Lots of good ideas for players and GMs. You can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. You can call the voicemail 626-LEX-GMI-1. It's been a while since I've gotten a voicemail. I'd love to hear from you. Please visit the website, starwalkerstudios.com/GM intrusions. And you can find links to all kinds of good stuff there. Everything that I talked about in the show today will be linked in the show notes. And finally, one more time, if you would like to support the show and support the studio, there are lots of great ways you can do so now. You can become a patron on Joyride or Patreon. You can use our donate button on the website. You can check out our Audible Books trial. You can use our Amazon affiliate link when you shop, or you can tell a friend about our shows, or better yet, do all the above.
This week's GM Intrusion.
All right, for this week's intrusion, we have an intrusion submitted by Sean O'Donnell, and this is an intrusion that you could use anytime, but is especially useful during combat. A hole opens up in reality, and another version of the PC comes out. This version has several, or perhaps more, distinguishing scars and an eye patch. It also has the singular goal of killing another party member, shouting things like, "You start everything," and "I have to kill you for the good of the Ninth World," or "I was a fool forever trusting you." Is it actual time travel or a fiendish ploy from a nemesis? Perhaps a nemesis the party has yet to meet, or a thing never to be brought up again. It's up to you, GM. And also, this is a great intrusion that you could use in Numenera or The Strange, or maybe even in some other Cypher System game you might be playing in the future. So thank you very much, Sean O'Donnell, for that intrusion. I really appreciate it. And thank you, listener, so much for listening to the show. And thank you so much for your support, however you do so. I really appreciate it. Once again, I am Lex Starwalker, and this has been a GM Intrusion.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts. This episode's music provided by Stanko, Renfield, Cloudwalker, Transboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/GM intrusions. GM Intrusions is made possible thanks to the support of listeners like you. Learn how you can become a patron of the show at patreon.com/GM intrusions.
I'm awesome!